Today on Barca Talk, the Champions League draw puts Barcelona in a challenging group. Peñas all over the U.S. are dealing with how to watch games. Barça B are starting off their campaign well, and the first team responds to an early goal from Huesca with an opening of the floodgates. Hey everybody, welcome to Barca Talk. Brian Henderson here, coming at you from Buffalo, New York, and joining me, as per usual, is Gabriel Quiroga in Madrid.
Hello, Brian. What's going on?
Oh, today? You're changing it. You've changed it. I feel I'm on a different show entirely.
I threw you a curveball.
Yeah,
so
you did.
How you doing?
Knocked it out of the park.
You pointed to the fence.
I called my spot. Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I just finished watching the game. We won 8-2. Very nice. I'm feeling 8 goals good. How are you feeling?
Well, that's good. No, I'm feeling 8 goals good as well. So
maybe 6 because they scored 2. So I'm feeling 6 goals good.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But overall, just a really good shellacking.
Quite.
My favorite team, Huesca.
Yes, you know? Huesca. Our favorite whipping boy. When they scored early on, I thought, oh no, we're going to have to start showing Huesca more respect on the show. But then by the 90th minute, I was like, no, we don't.
No, we don't. Poor Huesca. But a good showing for the boys. And yeah, just another great weekend in Madrid. I went out with some friends last night. Just a perfect terrace kind of a night. Just hanging out with some friends. Enjoying some beers and just talking nonsense. So overall a good weekend. And how about you? How was your weekend?
It was nice. Megan just played her first, it wasn't her first, but she played a tango gig last night. As you know, my wife is a bassist and she normally plays like classical orchestral stuff, but she has played in other groups like, Americana groups. I think at one point she was in a Balkan band. She's never really like gotten into like jazz, but she's done all these other kind of popular styles of music, and she recently got hooked up with the Buffalo Tango Orchestra, and I just saw her for the first time last night playing with them, so that was fun. And it started raining in the middle of the set. They were playing indoors, but I had walked a good distance from my car to get to the venue, so that wasn't great. But yeah, you know, we're in that weird space here between extreme heat and the beginning of fall where it's going to start raining a lot more, and it's like it rains but then there's steam coming off the ground because it's still so hot.
Yikes.
But judging from the crowd at the Camp Nou at this game over the weekend, it looks like everyone, like you said, is back from vacation, so life is in Madrid is becoming vibrant again.
Yeah, we're back, baby. We're back from vacation.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, so
back from the south of France.
The streets are popping. Everyone's back. So yeah, like I said, over this week, like Thursday, Wednesday night, people were definitely coming back. And for example, I have some bars on my street and they were definitely open and with lots of people again. And just today when I went to the grocery store, packed with people. I was like, go back on vacation.
Yep, stocking back up on their jamón serrano.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, we got news to get into first up. So first thing, Champions League draw. Some are calling it a group of death. I am on the fence about that, but we pulled Tottenham, PSV, and Inter. And first up, I just want to say from one of our listeners, Alex Song, he says that it's looking really tough, which I think is a good thing. Unlike Bayern's, Madrid's, and Man City's groups, all of our opponents are legitimate threats in this competition. If we can get past the group stages, or better yet, win the group, it will definitely give me a lot more confidence moving forward in the knockout stages.
You know, as I always say, bring it on, right? Bring it on, baby.
You know,
I always expect the worst, you know, the worst draw, and then anything better than that that's how I just look at it. So, this is the toughest football yearly tournament. I always go, you know, like I said, the attitude of having the toughest draw. And, you know, I wouldn't say this is completely the group of death, but it's definitely a tough, you know, tough group as well. But, you know, I want us to, you know, have a good campaign. I think we will with our experience, our pedigree, our talent as well. And, you know, obviously we want to get the top spot because obviously going into the next round, that's going to help us to have a better opponent that we can have a better advantage. But to me, I just, you know, I have confidence that we're going to go through with this. You know, obviously PSV and Inter at home at their place is going to be a difficult match. But I think, like I said, with our talent, our pedigree, our experience, we should be able to advance. You know, I think Group H is more the group of death. What do you think?
I agree. Group H with Valencia and Manchester United and Juventus and then the new boys. What are The Boxcar Boys. It's also
yeah, the new boys. The, yeah. the new boys to men.
That will be an especially tough one with those three teams. I think Juventus are still the favorites to top that group, but the second spot is really going to be the thing to be contested between the other two, between Man United and Valencia. But I think similarly with our group, of course, we, along with Tottenham, are probably the favorites to get out of the group. But in both cases, PSV and Inter are going to give both of us problems. So if nothing else, I'm still confident that we're going to get out of the group. I do think that it's quite likely that we'll win the group. But yeah, PSV and Inter are going to make it hard for both us and Tottenham. So as to who actually does win the group is more up to them than to us or Tottenham, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I just think that, you know, with Tottenham, they're still kind of a growing team. You know, they're still kind of getting more experience. They're not quite there at that Man City level yet. I mean, they're definitely talented. I watched their game last week against Man U, and they definitely have the pace and really good attacking. But we just have Messi, and that just kind of negates a lot of things.
Right, so. That's true. Well, so, and we're going to talk about this later, because the issue with we have Messi and you don't, which is always an advantage that we have over everybody else, is that when the other teams make it a point to really shut down Messi, then we have problems. But this is one of the talking points that we've been bringing up a lot this season, and we're going to continue to do so, is the question as to whether Barcelona have been relying too much on Messi. And I think that the tide there is turning. So even if they do shut down Messi defensively and cut him off from being as effective as he can be, we're still going to have threats. But I don't want to get into that too much right now, because we're going to talk about that in a little bit more detail. We're going to go back and forth on that more later. But moving forward with the news, these are the final... Well, the transfer window is now officially closed. And the two changes, or... One was a change and one was a non-change, but the two bits of news for FC Barcelona in the last week were Paco going to Borussia Dortmund on loan and Rafinha not going anywhere. So first up, Paco on loan to Dortmund for a 2 million euro loan fee with the option to buy after the loan term at 25 million euro. And the fallout from this is that we're left now only with Munir as a backup to Suarez. And we got this from one of our listeners, Cameron, on Patreon, on Paco versus Munir. He says, "I don't get it, man."
I was on my soapbox, you know, this week on yes. Twitter, just asking, you know, that I prefer Paco just as a depth, right? And I know, again, champagne problems, right? Munir or Paco. I mean, we really don't have to really rely on them, but, you know, just in case, you know, just in case Suarez goes down with injury or just needs a break. Who do you trust? I just trust Paco a little bit more, just because of his experience prior to coming to Barcelona, his goal scoring. And people were, you know, combating me with Munir's dribbling and ability to move without the ball. Again, like I told you, someone sent me a YouTube mixed video, and I responded, "Oh, yes, you're right. With a YouTube mixed video, you convinced me completely." So,
yeah, with a YouTube video, you can make Andre Gomes look like Barcelona's most valuable player.
That's why I didn't even watch it. So,
right.
You know, but I, like I said, for Cameron and other people who were kind of in jest talking about this debate, you know, I was just talking from a depth as just a, you know, a question out there to put out to fellow Kool-Aids. And again, Valgreen just prefers Munir, and that's why he shipped him. I think Paco is going to have a great year this year with Borussia Dortmund, just getting more playing time, and especially in that attacking style that they have. Obviously, I'm going to support Munir because he's on the team, and I just hope he can step up when he's asked to get that playing time. If he needs to, you know, to spell Suarez from rest, or if some sort of injury comes, I just hope Munir can step up and just fill that void.
Yeah, and I don't think that he has to score goals necessarily, or at least he doesn't have to score a lot of goals. Frankly, Suarez hasn't scored a lot of goals yet, but he's making a very important contribution. You can see in this match against Huesca, for example, the assists he was making, the positions he was taking up, the way he was helping to spread the defense out a little bit. Well, there was one very good assist that he made. In fact, his passes have been better than his finishes so far this year. But if Munir can at least do a similar kind of thing for the team, I'm good with that. I don't need him to score a ton of goals when he plays.
Yeah, and the other thing too is, you know, if something were to happen to Suarez, we could mix up the formation where Messi's in the middle, and then we have maybe Malcolm and Dembele or something like that to, you know, get some goal scoring and speed to cover that Suarez gap if we need to. But But yeah, we're going to talk about Suarez's performance because I was hyper focused on him today watching the match. So I have some notes on him that we're going to talk about later on.
Okay, good. Now, real quick for all of you listening, what do you think of sending Paco away while Munir stays? Let us know at BarçaTalk.net. Now, the other story, of course, was that Rafinha is staying. The efforts to send him to Betis didn't pan out, so he remains at Barcelona, but Valverde left him off the squad for the Huesca match, and that's the second week in a row. We assumed last week that he left him off the squad because there was this loan to Betis sort of looming, and I figured, in fact, I called Rafinha as being in my starting 11 for this match against Huesca as a rotational player because I figured that the loan to Betis wouldn't go through. He would stay on the squad and then Valverde would want to use him again, but he left him out still.
Yeah. Like I have my notes here. We're probably going to see his minutes just come in the Copa del Rey campaign because like today and the game before, he didn't even make the roster. So, you know, obviously Valgrin just doesn't want to dress him. I think as we saw today, Artur and Vidal got their playing time tonight. I just think he has more confidence in them as midfield than Rafinha. I think maybe because of Rafinha's maybe lack of defense, maybe, or something like that. But I just find it interesting that, you know, he was kind of the profile player that he, you know, during the summer campaign, right? He was using him a lot. He was starting, getting a lot of time. And just from the body language, you know, I'm a body language expert.
That's right.
You know, it seemed as though that Rafinha was going to definitely get some more playing time this year, you know, and whatever Valgrin was asking him to do, he was doing it. And also, you know, getting some assists as well and looking pretty good this summer. And as we can see, you know, it can change just like that.
Yeah, football is a fickle world. So, again, for all of you listening, tell us what you think about this. Do you want to see Rafinha on the squad? Do you want him playing more minutes? And is Valverde making the right decision? Let us know. BarçaTalk.net. Now, just a quick note before we go to a break. You know, we've been building this podcast from the ground up. If you've been listening, you know that we aren't part of a big podcast network and we don't have a huge budget to do all the things we'd like to do. Not yet, at least. We're continuing to work on that. So we want to improve the show with better production, more contributors, and more exclusive and high-quality coverage of FC Barcelona and Culés Everywhere. And we're not there yet, but you can help us get there. Become a supporter on Patreon. We have 3 tiers of support with benefits for each one, including commercial-free episodes, special bonus episodes, fun merchandise, and drawings for Barca gear. So click on the link in the episode description for this episode to check out the premiums you'll get with a monthly contribution. Thanks. Now, next up, after the break, the fan community, Barça B and Barça Women. All right, we're back. This is Barça Talk. And I want to give a mention to the Peña in Las Vegas. I imagine they posted this on Twitter as well, but I was checking Instagram the other day, and they really went out of their way to keep everyone informed as to what was going on with their meeting place for this week. Since the place they had been going only has DirecTV, and beIN apparently is no longer on DirecTV, they had to switch to a new location, and I think they did a great job, as far as I can tell, of letting all their members know. And if you're interested, if you're ever in or around Las Vegas and you want to find the Peña to go watch a match, you can follow them on Twitter or Instagram at FCBarçaLV. And I'm sure all the Peñas are having these kinds of issues with keeping their members informed as to where to meet up. And for some who have been meeting at the same place for a long time, that could be tricky. But to all the Peñas out there dealing with this issue, if you've had to come up with an unlikely or bizarre solution to getting your people together to watch games, tell us your story at BarçaTalkPod@gmail.com.
Yeah, this is a crazy thing that's going on because, you know, imagine you're a bar, right? I'm sorry, but La Liga is probably maybe fourth on their list of, you know, TV that they're really interested in. Obviously, the NFL and college football is probably going to be their main get. And DirecTV offers the Sunday ticket.
Right.
So most bars are going to have Sunday or DirecTV. And so that's going to be some sort of conflict. So I'm interested, too, to hear what are these stories. My dad just messaged me. He just got Sling TV. So he's happy about that. And again, this is
took
just
my recommendation.
Exactly. And so this is, you know, this is quite a big deal because I've been seeing on Twitter too, that the other Peñas are having to move around, find a bar that doesn't have DirecTV, right, to show the game and to have that Peña experience. And again, if you're a bar, you know, most of your money, you know, for the most part is going to come from college football and NFL, and DirecTV offers that. And of course, you're not just going to switch just like that to really accommodate La Liga. Unfortunately, it's not at that
it's still kind of niche.
It's still kind of niche. So hopefully they're able to get together still and watch those games, because that's a big pain in the ass.
Yeah, seriously. Now, speaking of Peñas, the Los Angeles Peña alerted us to a travel package they've, let's say, instigated with a travel agent in LA, because it's not just them who's doing it, but this is a really cool travel package because the flights are set up from a lot of major U.S. cities as part of the package, right? So, of course, plenty of L.A. Peña members are going to be going on this trip, but it's set up for people all over the country, and wherever you're flying from, the airfare is part of whatever ultimate price you pay. So the trip is scheduled for April next year for the fixture against Atletico Madrid, and it's a really nice package. It has round-trip airfare, hotel, ticket for a hop-on, hop-off city bus tour. The Camp Nou experience, get one ticket to that, and of course a ticket to the Atletico match. So if you're looking to set up some travel plans to see Barcelona play this year, this looks like a great option, and Megan and I are going, so you could join us and all the North American Peñas in Barcelona this April. There's a link in the description of this episode, or you can go to peñalosangeles.com/travel.
You just slipped that in like you're just going to New York or something.
Yeah.
Get excited.
No, I'm going.
You're going. I'm going. We're going to have an event. Let's get psyched.
We're
going to
have Barca Talk in Barcelona for the first time ever in April.
Correct. So let's get pumped, right?
Okay,
so
pump it.
I was contacted by the Los Angeles Peña about this trip. And first of all, let's talk about the trip. It's a great trip. Let me just mention the cities really quick that has airfare from it. It's from Chicago, Dallas, Houston, Los Angeles, Montreal, Denver, Phoenix, New York, San Francisco, Toronto, and Washington, D.C. So if you're in any of those cities, come join us. We're going to do a whole event for the weekend. We're going to do a live episode, hopefully, as long as the game is on the Saturday night, we should be able to do the live event there. But we're going to meet up with the Peña members there, and it's going to be an awesome weekend. We're just going to go to the match. We're going to do the Camp Nou experience. And, of course, we're just going to have some Cañas in Barcelona, my brother.
Yeah. I mean, I'm down for a full beer, but I'll have a Caña.
Remember, it's a marathon, not a sprint, buddy.
Yes, right. Got to pace myself.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I'm very excited because obviously we're going to be meeting in person for the first time in three-dimensional form.
Right. So a lot of Barca Talk firsts are going to happen on this trip.
Yeah, so we're really excited. So again, it's the April 3rd weekend coming up in the spring. And also, which is great, is this trip has a payment plan as well available. We're going to put the link. The link is going to be in the show notes, but we're also going to put it on our website as well. And that brings me to the other thing, that I've been putting together a page on our website to give tips, some, not I wouldn't say tricks, just more like tips of traveling to Barcelona. If you can't make it for this weekend, you know, which airline to check out, where to stay, game day experience, how to get tickets and so forth. So I'm building that page right now. I only have a couple things up there. So if you have any suggestions, you can email us at, you know, you can find us our email address on barcatalk.net.
Yeah. And I'm really glad that for anyone who's not going to do this particular trip, we're trying to set up some good helpful information for you as a place where you can go for various resources for planning your own trip to Barcelona. So thank you, Gabriel, for setting that up. Now, let's turn to Barca women. They steamrolled the Catalunya Cup, first shutting out Pariñas 9-0 in the semifinal, and then very comfortably winning the final against Espanyol 7-0. Liga Iberdrola is going to start next week against Athletic Club in Bilbao, and we will have a full report for you next week from our Barca women correspondent, Michelle Taylor. And now Barca B. So they have started their campaign already in Segunda B, and the new manager, Garcia Pimienta, has the boys getting off to a good start with 2 wins out of 2 so far. And now, with commentary on that first match against Alcoyano and a look at the squad, is our Barca B correspondent, Max Bleuer.
Garcia Pimienta's boys started off their league campaign in Segunda B last weekend with a 3-1 defeat away to Valencian side Alcoyano. Canadian Ivorian winger Jean-Yves Balou was the name on the score sheet for us, curling home from around the penalty spot after Carlos Perez had done really well to beat his fullback, and put in a low cross on the left. The goal came on the stroke of half-time and was the equaliser after Alcayano had opened the scoring from a corner with not even a minute on the clock. The hosts had dominated much of the first half, using an aggressive passing game and sometimes just downright aggression to overcome the technical short-passing style that Garcia Pimienta is looking to instil as his team's style of play. Nevertheless, Barça B did have their moments, with Baru turning his marker inside out with some wonderful dribbling on a couple of occasions, and Ricky Puig using the ball in midfield neatly and imaginatively. Unfortunately, just as the boys were getting used to Alcoyano's physical style and were starting to impose their own game, the Valencian team scored in the 75th minute and again in the 91st. I referred to the team just now as boys, and that really is what they are. The starting 11 had an average age of just 19, and 7 of them were teenagers. Barça B's youth this season makes a stark and welcome contrast to last year, when the club decided to fill the squad in more experienced signings from outside the club structure, in a doomed attempt to stay in Segunda División. This policy was heavily criticised, both from the outside. After all, it distorted the competition to have a club with Barça's firepower signing whoever we wanted to for the B team. And also from the socios, as signings like the 24-year-old Honduran striker Antonio Lozano or the 23-year-old midfielder Inigo Ruiz de Galarreta, neither of whom ever had a hope of making the first team, were seen to have been blocking the progression of younger players from the lower age groups. Having said that, the club announced on transfer deadline day, which is today as we record this, the signing of Uruguayan under-20s captain Ronald Araujo. Araujo is a centre-back signed from Montevidean club Boston River, no, I've no idea who they are either, for €1.7 million up front, with variables rising to a maximum of €5.2 million. Perhaps the policy hasn't changed quite as much as we'd like to think. Nonetheless, guys like Lozano and Ruiz de Galarreta have since been moved on, with their spots in and around the starting 11 taken by some extremely exciting young talents, like Abba Ruiz, Ricky Puig and Juan Miranda. Miranda has been a protagonist of one of the sporting director's dilemmas over the summer. Who was to be the backup to Jordi Alba, once it became clear that Lucas Digne wanted to leave the club in search of more first-team football? Valgarin had initially been minded to bring in an experienced signing, but Eric Abadal and his team quickly decided, partly to alleviate a bloated wage bill and partly to give a boost to La Masia, that the second-choice left-back would come from the academy. The two candidates for the position were 20-year-old Catalan Marc Cucurella, who had been left-back for the B team in Segunda last year, and 18-year-old Andalusian Juan Miranda, who was one of the batch of juvenil players promoted to the B team last year and was first choice for the team that won the UEFA Youth League last year, beating Chelsea 3-0 in the final. Both players went on the tour of the US with the first team in pre-season, in what was widely interpreted as an audition between the two for the place of second choice left back. Miranda is seen as the more technically gifted player, better at combining with his teammates. And while Cucurella is the more athletic, more able to get to the byline, deliver a cross and make it back to his defensive position, it is thought within the club that as Miranda develops, his physicality will come to match that of Cucurella. The latter, not wanting to drop down to Segunda B after a solid season in Segunda, is looking to leave and has been given permission to do so, with Eibar looking close to his signature at the moment. Along with Juan Miranda, we might see Ricky Puig in action with the first team in the not-too-distant future as well. A talented, ball-playing midfielder who, dare I say it, reminds us a little bit of Andres Iniesta in the way he can escape a marker in the tightest of spots. But unlike the great man, he scores a few goals as well. Another one to look out for, who might make the odd appearance for the first team, is Abba Ruiz. Captain of Spain's under-17s, for whom he was the second top goalscorer at last year's under-17 World Cup. This centre-forward broke several goal-scoring records in the youth teams, and will be hoping to catch Valverde's eye with his performances for the B team, particularly now that Paco Alcácer has departed for pastures new in Germany. Not to be forgotten is Carles Zelenya, another talented goal-scoring midfielder who, thanks to his fabulous individual performances in Segunda last year, has already been promoted to the first team. However, a horrible injury in the final game of last season, a 2-0 loss to Real Zaragoza, ruled Alenya out for all of pre-season. He's recently returned to training, and Valverde has said that he will play with the B team, at least until he gains complete match fitness. Having a man who scored 11 goals from midfield in Segunda will be a huge plus for Garcia Pimienta, even if it's only for a few games. Although looking at the surfeit of central midfielders at Valgrin's disposal, by my count, Barca have 10 central midfielders competing for just 3 places. Alenya could be spending a fair bit of time with Barça B. Barça B's second match of the season is at home against Aragonese side Ejea on Saturday the 1st of September. Ruiz, Puig, Miranda and co will all be hoping to get their first points of the season as they grace the mini-stadi for the first time this year.
Thanks, Max, for that report. Now, next up, after the break, 8 is enough. Goals, that is. 1970s television? No? All right. All right, we're back, and we're here to now talk about the match against Huesca. It was La Liga match day 3 in the Camp Nou, and the stadium was packed with everyone back from vacation with an 8-2 win.
That is correct. So everyone was back from vacation, good ambiance, but it did not start off well with Huesca scoring very early. But before we get into that, let's get into the lineup for Barcelona. So for Barcelona, we had Ter Stegen in goal, your boys Sergi, Roberto, Pique, Umtiti, Alba. Then we had Rakitic, Busquets, Coutinho, Dembele, Messi, and Suarez. And so on my television, the Spanish version, they said 4-3-3. I looked on who scored. They're telling me 4-4-2. So
pick it's debatable. Because they are really, they're flowing in a lot of ways.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I would say just more 4-3-3 just because at the beginning, the way Dembele was spaced and where Messi was. But obviously towards the end, you know, like you said, they were just floating in and out and kind of a 4-4-2, 4-3-3 kind of a thing. So, but yeah, so the same starting lineup. And really quick, just the reaction on Twitter and myself, you know, as we talked about, we want a little bit more rotation. And I know we scored 8 goals and that's great. But I just want to see some of the squad members getting playing time. And it has nothing to do with the other players being tired right now. It has nothing to do with that. It's just integrating them through the whole season, right? Because we have so many games. And I really wanted to see Linglet. I really wanted to see Malcolm play somehow, maybe get Suarez a break today. But, you know, I don't know what to say. You know, I don't know if Valgrin is learning from last year.
Well, you know, Huesca got off to a pretty good start, and I'll detail that in just a second, actually. But maybe their good results in the first two match days got Valverde thinking. And I would like to know what our listeners think. You know, did Valverde show Huesca more respect than necessary with this lineup? Or is he still trying to settle this 11 into a well-oiled machine, regardless of the opponent? And I know that you also have an idea about or an opinion about how he's not putting players in the best optimal position. And I'm wondering specifically which players for you were in suboptimal positions in this match.
Well, before we get into that, I mean, if Valgrin is giving Huesca respect, I mean, this is a nightmare because I understand, you know, it's sports, anything can happen. But at the same time, we're Barcelona at home with Messi. You know, this shouldn't happen. You should just go with squad players, have confidence that you're still going to get 6 goals instead of 8 with this starting 11. And I get that's the other point of view that people were saying on Twitter, like to get the starting 11 steamrolling. I understand that, but we have a long season. We have international break coming up. It's just, you know, we can afford to plug in some players. And for suboptimal, it's just, I just want Messi to be in the middle, right? I just want him to be in the middle at all times because he's going to play make, he's going to shoot. And from him, everything comes out, right? So I want Coutinho as on the left side, Dembele on the right, and Suarez up top. That's what I want. I don't know how, you know, if you want to say a 4-3-3.
And then you want Messi in behind them in the center.
Exactly, exactly. Because then he can receive the ball from Busquets or Rakitic, turn and go, give and go on the right, and just free flow. Because you know Messi just wants to free flow. So just let him free flow because that's where he's the most dangerous. I mean, we saw today how many passes he was getting through over the top, anything he wanted, right? And if he's on the right side, we don't have a playmaker in the middle to be as dynamic. And so we need Messi in the middle. But when we have Messi in the middle, we need the balance on the right side. And as we saw earlier, when Dembele was on the right and he hit that shot that hit the crossbar, you see how with how much confidence he's playing on the right side where he just looks like a different player on the right. And obviously he scored on the left today. I get that, but I just think he is just more comfortable on the right and obviously having Coutinho on the left.
Yeah, I think that your idea is fair enough, but I don't know what Valverde is thinking exactly, but he's definitely not thinking the way you are. But, you know, he reserved those squad players for substitutions. So Longley did come in for Umtiti, Vidal came in for Rakitic, and Arthur came in for Busquets.
Great.
I know that your issue is more that you want to see them start.
Exactly. I just want them to get minutes, you know?
Right.
And again, yeah, Huesca scored early, but you saw, I mean, we can turn the tide very quickly. And with our team, our talent, I knew that this was going to be a win. I just didn't know that Huesca was going to score. And that was really bad. I think just lazy defending from the get-go. But after they, you know, got that early goal, they woke up really quickly and they were able to get those goals. And I mean, after it was 5-2, you know, it's game set Guillermo.
Right. Well, speaking of respect to Huesca, I want to give them a little bit because they've had a really good start to, or they have had a pretty good start to the season. They started off with a 2-1 win over Eibar, and that's one of the clubs who's really been coming up since being promoted themselves 4 years ago. So I think that was a good win for Huesca. Then last week they drew to Athletic Club 2-2. And that was an excellent result for them, especially with a new manager in Leo Franco. But at this point, Huesca are actually accustomed to a revolving door of managers, as it turns out. Since 2014, they had four different managers. Only Luis Tevenet was able to stick around for two seasons from 2014 to 16. So they've got another new manager, and they got good results in those first 2 weeks. And I think the Athletic Club result was especially interesting in that it wasn't a goalless draw. It wasn't a 1-1 draw. They scored two goals, and it was a 2-2 draw. So they got off to a really good start. Now, in this match, of course, they set up in a 4-4-2, which with the same exact lineup, same exact players that they've played in the first two matches. So they have a really standard best 11 that Franco has picked out, and I'm not going to go through every player on the lineup. But I will also say that their goalkeeper, Werner, did have a couple of good moments, and he's another one of those Atletico Madrid recruits. He's actually on loan from Atletico, and for some reason, there's just something in the water in that neighborhood of Madrid. They just know how to pick goalkeepers. But anyway, Huesca started with a strong pressing game in midfield, as far as I could tell, getting more compact when Barca were in and around their goal area, but they were really looking to close down the player looking for the final pass. And what surprised me was that they weren't very concerned about shutting down Messi. He was actually getting a lot of the ball, and they really paid for it.
Yeah, they were coming in to basically spar or box with Barcelona. Like, they didn't want to park the bus. And that's commendable, right? Because a lot of teams will just park 11 people and have one forward up there for the counter. Especially after they scored that first goal, they were definitely playing, you know, with house money at that point. Again, right. No, it's true, right? I mean, they threw a cross in there, and they got a mix-up, and they got a goal, you know? And they were up 1-0 within the first 3 minutes. But like you said, you know, they've played good. But again, how good is Athletic Bilbao this year? You know, those are the type of, you know, those are the, I mean, we always think of Athletic Bilbao from 4 years ago, you know, when Valverde was there and they were a tougher team. But lately, I just don't think they're as good. And again, Huesca, fine, you know. But again, my whole thesis of this is I just want us to be more aggressive with our lineups and our formation against teams at home that we should just automatically win on paper.
Right. Well, you know, also most of those goals for us, or was it six of them, right? Six of them came in the second half. And that first half, and especially in those first 20 minutes, Huesca were really pressing hard. But then after 20 minutes, they relaxed their pressing. Probably they'd gotten a little tired, right? And they were giving Barcelona more time, but instead they were just trying to occupy the space. And it just shows that it's still hard for some teams to press for the whole game. It's very exhausting. But in the last, like, 15 of the first half, they had to just resort to committing more fouls. And in the second, they started off trying to press, but they just couldn't keep it up very long at all. I think that lasted all of 5 minutes in the second half.
I mean, it's super difficult to press that long, especially when you never get the ball. You know, if you're constantly chasing and pressing as a team, it sounds really good in theory, but as to execute it and to run for that long, you're just not trained that way because, you know, when you're playing football, you're sprinting, you're stopping, catching your breath, running a little bit. But if you're constantly chasing, it's really hard to do for more than 20 minutes. And as you noted, after 20 minutes, they were able to not press as high. And, you know, obviously we were still having holes, you know, we were still having a lot of attacking moments, which I liked. We weren't doing so much horizontal play. We were definitely going up the middle and shooting, which I really liked. But again, I just don't know if PK was still kind of on vacation mode right now because he didn't really have the best match day. Kind of left Sergi Roberto out to dry a couple times, especially on the first goal and on the second goal. And, you know, again, it's still a long season. I wish we would have played a better defense, you know, defensively better today. But again, we just, man, the goals we scored today were ridiculous.
Yeah, well, and we will talk about that. But real quick, what did you think about how Huesca handled their attack and their attacking approach?
Yeah, I mean, that's the blueprint, right, that you have to do. If you're either going to put 11 people back there and do long ball with counter, that's one way. Or if you're free-flowing, like Huesca did today, they had the two forwards up there, and they were just trying to give crosses as much as possible to give some sort of fluke goal, that, like they did like they got in the first couple minutes. So, you know, you got to give credit to Huesca because they kind of went into the game knowing that they were going to lose, but they didn't want to be one of those teams that everyone complains about being so defensive. So they danced with Barca, and ultimately they just couldn't hang after, you know, 45 minutes or so.
Right. Now, as far as that early goal, right? So the Barcelona defense did not get off to a good start, letting in that goal. Tactically, Huesca had Sergi overmanned, right, with players both in front and behind him, and nobody had come back to help cover. So if there was a defensive breakdown in that moment, I think it was in allowing themselves to get outmanned in the box, but also in letting the cross in the first place.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is just, you know, it's the beginning of the game, you know, and it's one of those moments where they just threw a cross up. And in that play, I think PK should have been closer to his man behind, and Sergio Roberto tracked back to see the guy behind him. And he just didn't notice the guy behind him. He headed it, and then the guy kind of just stuck his foot out there. So, you know, in the beginning of the match, you know, it's kind of one of those moments where you're just not even in the match yet. It was 2 minutes, you know, and Huesca was able to get that. It was a really nice cross. And again, like you said, Sergio Roberto was sandwiched by two Huesca players. He had to choose, you know, either or. He chose wrong, and there was a mix-up, and they were able to get up to the first goal.
Yeah, and like you said just a minute ago, I thought it was really nice to see Huesca come to play and not just sit deep, right? Because that always makes for a more exciting match to watch. But in those opening minutes, it showed that Barca weren't prepared for that. And, you know, it's when I stop and think about it, it does kind of blow my mind that happens, not just to us, but to even to big teams in all kinds of situations when they get scored on early, whether it's against a good side or a not-so-good side. These things happen. But it's like, wait, you know, you had the whole warm up, and then you went to the locker room, you got your uniform on, you guys walked out in lines, you did the whole lining up thing. How are you not prepared mentally for that whistle to blow?
Yeah, but it's not even like that. It's just like, for example, I remember playing, and it's just those first minutes, you just want to touch the ball. Mm-hmm. Right. And obviously you warmed up and you're ready that way. But in the actual match, you just want to have a touch and pass. And when you don't have that happen and all of a sudden you have to play defense and it's actually a goal scoring opportunity, then all of a sudden you're just not really ready yet. And I know you're a professional, but still, just in any level of football playing, you always want to get that first touch, that pass, and then get into the game that way. But once, you know, that happened with Sergio Roberto kind of being surprised by the play, then all of a sudden the lights went on for Barca and they were able to kind of really step it up a gear.
Yeah, although with that small exception of PK, like you said, he didn't have the best game. He didn't have a terrible game, but, you know, he was sort of partially involved in the first goal getting scored, or giving up the first goal to Huesca. And then on their second goal, they worked really hard to keep up the pressure on goal. I mean, they were kind of grasping at straws, and it just happened to work, right? But PK just wasn't ready for that last ball in, I think, because they were just pushing so hard and everything just happened to bounce their way on that second goal.
Exactly. And he just wasn't, you know, he just wasn't as aggressive in his man marking. You know, he just kind of let it slide, just thinking that they weren't going to get the ball through, and they got the ball through, and then all of a sudden the man was open and that was his man. So, you know, just lackadaisical defending. And I get it, because it's against Huesca. We were already up 2-1, especially with the own goal that happened. But, you know, we were able to eventually just have the avalanche of goals that came.
So now, talking about Barcelona on the attacking end, on our offensive end, you mentioned that you had a lot of things to say about Suarez. So let's get into Suarez.
Yeah, so I was hyper-focused on him. I was definitely watching him more than the other players during the attack. And, you know, I put it on Twitter. He's like one of those beer league strikers, you know, always offsides, walking and yelling at you. It's like the holy trinity of strikers, you know?
Right.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier that he had a great through ball for the goal against Coutinho. Or was it Coutinho or Dembele? Actually, it wasn't.
Okay, it wasn't.
He passed it and got deflected through Dembele. Okay. So it seemed as though Suarez had a great pass. Obviously, he scored 2 goals. That's what everyone's talking about. In the interview, they asked him about the goals, and he's just, I'm just happy that the team won. But he just still looks out of shape, not into it. Every time he's offsides, he walks back. He doesn't really run. And I know that, you know, it's, you know, he's just not into the mode yet. But at the same time, you know, with the one-on-one that he had, he didn't score. Just like his passing again was off. There was a couple passes where either was long, went out of bounds. He just doesn't gauge right the speed of Dembele or Coutinho and those type of plays. And I don't know. I want more from him, or I want someone else to have another opportunity so they maybe can see on tape another player moving with more ganas. You know what I'm saying? Just like, because when you watch, when I was watching a bunch of times, like, for example, the goal that he scored, right? If you watch it, he's not offsides because the ball wasn't given to him, but he just never, he never looks back. And I just can't understand that as a professional. We've talked about that. It's like one of the first things I learned as a striker was to always swivel your head to make sure that you're on the same line. And he just never does that. And obviously he wasn't caught this time, but it's just that kind of lazy type of walking and not really caring. And I don't know what's going on. I don't know if he's just overplaying in September and October. You know, could be because he's been playing for such a long time with the World Cup and so forth. But give some other players some opportunities so that we can have fresh legs and let Suarez rest.
Yeah, and as far as misjudging Dembele or anything like that, I think there were a couple of times where I think he overestimated Dembele's speed, where he just really put a ball through like with a lot of heat. And I'm like, what are you thinking, man? Like, Dembele's fast, but he's not that fast.
Yeah, he put a lot of hot sauce on those passes.
Yeah.
He was like, go get it. Oh.
That's me. That's my fault. So, yeah. Sorry.
But the opposite of that was, you know, my boy Messi. You know, he's my boy, not yours.
Right.
But man, like we always talk about.
He belongs to all of us.
Yes, he does. He's Dios.
Yeah.
You know, that's really all it is.
Yeah.
But that move he did on the first goal was ridiculous. And I can tell you that as a lefty, I love doing that move. I obviously can't do it as smooth as his, but I would always set up my opponents that way. And you can see that he does have so many opportunities to go to the right. If you look at that goal again, there's three guys shadowing him to the left. And finally he went to the right and he was able to hit that. And obviously the finish was something you do in training where you just hit the post and it goes in, you know, and he was able to do it in a match. So amazing finish. He's, you know, tied for the top lead score after this game with Benzema.
Yeah, and when he scored on that, I noticed he went to the right. I thought you would be happy. And I know that you're looking for him to go to the right also more in playmaking as well, because everyone's expecting to go from right to left. And I know that you're really looking to see him go to the right more in the playmaking position. But in this case, he went to the right and there was all the space in the world that he needed to score.
Yeah, and I know he can go left and still beat people with three players shadowing him. I know he's that great, but if he just goes to the right just a little bit more, then that's going to be on film. And now those players have to be worried if he's going to go left or right, and he can still go left more often to have those opportunities. But again, his passing tonight, his playmaking was off the charts. Amazing. I mean, there were so many passes where he went over the top, he chipped on the Rakitic goal. Like, how does the commentators are even seeing? How does he even see it? How he's always three plays ahead of everyone, and the passing he does for everyone, especially Alba on the left, the through balls he does are just magic. I mean, it's just pure magic.
Yeah, and Ray Hudson was saying the same thing a few times in this game about how Messi just invents passing lanes that no one else can possibly see, and he gets it to someone. And I don't know if I should bring this up or not, but I'm going to. In the whole Messi v. Ronaldo debate, which will of course always exist, it will never be put to bed, I don't think, but in any case, you know, the thing about the tall guy, the Portuguese guy, is that he plays a very standard game. He just plays it really, really, really well. He's kind of like a really great practitioner of fundamentals and solid, like, textbook football, and he's just really good at it. Whereas on the other hand, Messi invents a new game. He's just on another he can also do that. He can also play the textbook game really well, but then he also invents and he opens your eyes to other possibilities of what this game could be. And I think, of course, I became a Barcelona fan while Messi was already, you know, he'd really arrived as a player. And of course, I've been watching that for 8 years now. For people who were Barcelona fans before Messi showed up, it's just we're just glad to have him, such as yourself. You're just glad to have Messi on the club, and you're probably grateful every day, maybe even more so than me, because I didn't know a time before Messi. But I think if someone were getting into the game right now, it all boils down to what your personality is. Like, if you want someone who's going to be like muscular and fast and do the fundamentals really well, then that Portuguese dude is your guy. But for those of us who like art and beauty and inventiveness and imagination, Messi is your guy, and he's going to pull you into FC Barcelona.
Well said. Well said.
Why, yeah, thank
I
you.
Mean, yeah, yeah.
That was all off the dome, by the way. I didn't write that one up.
I saw that. You were just free-flowing. Free-flowing, Eminem style, man. You know?
I was like Eminem.
I mean, you know, tonight when he's super, like, I want to use the word in Spanish, enchufado, like plugged in, right? When he's super into the match and just diming everyone, picking spots and just controlling the tempo, there's just no one like him. I mean, there's just no one like him. And the passes he was doing, I always admire the way he's able to distribute the balls off to Alba. He never gets them intercepted, either on the ground or in the air. And the way the through ball that he can play through Suarez and so forth, I mean, like, as we always say, defending this attacking is just such a nightmare. And especially if we have all the players clicking and moving, as we saw in the second half, it's just an avalanche. So I ask you, what was your favorite goal of the night?
Oh, my favorite goal. Well, I think my favorite actually was Rakitic's, mainly because it was surprising. I didn't see it coming. You know, Rakitic, he's not going to score much. He doesn't score much. He's been playing in a different role, but it was one of those surprising moments where I didn't see it coming, and his finish was spot on. Just a brilliant finish on the volley. The crossover to him was fantastic. So that was my favorite goal.
That was my favorite goal as well. And for two reasons, the pass by Messi to go over the top, Umtiti stopping, realizing that Rakitic was going to do it. I don't know if you ever played Street Fighter 2 as a kid.
Of course.
But it kind of reminded me of the Guile flash kick. It's like, bam, out of nowhere, you know? It's like, flash kick. But it was so clinical, the way he was able to turn his hips and hit it. And all of our goals tonight were really great because they were just low corners hitting the post and going in, you know? And the finishing tonight was outstanding. But for me, Rakitic's goal was my favorite. Just the setup from Messi over the top, Umtiti stopping, realizing it's for Rakitic, and Rakitic not even hesitating, flash kick, boom, goal. You know, it was perfect.
And there was also that one from Jordi. It was one of the later goals. And the thing I especially liked about that wasn't necessarily anyone who was involved in making the goal, but what I really loved was how Suarez, knowing he was offside, let the ball go through and just let the play happen.
He's always offside.
Okay, let me just... Hang on. Referee corner. All right. There's offside, and then there's in an offside position. He was in an offside position. Yeah, he knew it, and he knew that if he touched or even moved towards the ball, the play would go dead, and he didn't move. He let the play go through. It was, in that moment, the best thing he could have done, and he did it.
Do you think they all yelled at him on the field? They're like, no, Suarez! And he stopped.
They might have to. Maybe that's what's necessary on the pitch.
Gosh.
He's like, no, Luis!
Yeah. No!
But yeah, very like balanced scoring, just goals from every which way, from surprising players, including, well, there was the one that was an own goal, but it came from Jordi Alba's attempt. Yeah. But he also did get a goal of his own. Rakitic, Messi with what, two, right? Dembele. Yeah. Did Coutinho score as well?
No, he didn't score, but he had a hand in a lot of attacking plays.
A lot of them.
He had a really nice play with Messi. Actually, Coutinho had a nice through ball to Messi, you know, for his goal. That was really nice. Found the space. Again, it's just, you can see when we have space, the through ball, our speed, how we're able to exploit those spaces. But, I mean, it was just a great overall attacking performance. Obviously, as we talked about, you know, we would have liked a stronger defense. Obviously, Lenglet got some playing time, so that was nice to see. Vidal came in. Also, Artur got his first La Liga playing time as well. So, overall, a good game. Here in Madrid, Brian, there's been a huge, huge debate since Thursday about the whole Ronaldo not going to Monaco for the Champions League festivities.
Mm.
And when Suarez took the penalty kick, I don't know if you saw in the video that Messi picked up the ball and threw it to Suarez to let him take the penalty kick. So obviously,
I did.
Just the comparison again, as always, how selfless and a team player Messi is, and he just wants to see his players. Again, this guy, Ronaldo, man, the fact that he couldn't even go to Monaco to support his team. You know, his team swept the awards to celebrate. I mean, he must, again, he said he had a personal issue, obviously. He didn't go. But again, it's just kind of the dichotomy of the two players, right? Messi, if you see the video in Jess, the way he does it, he just throws the ball to Suarez. Suarez takes it, places it, scores the goal. you know.
Well, okay.
Going to Suarez's house for dinner, you know, it's like.
All right. To be fair, if you're looking for people who don't like Cristiano Ronaldo, I'm at the front of the line based on what I observe in him. But to be fair, if he says he has a personal issue and if he says he has a personal issue and it's you or me hearing that, we're going to go, yeah, sure. Sure. You have a personal issue, Chris, whatever, Chris. But.
He was going to come. He canceled 40 minutes before the helicopter was supposed to take him.
So if that had happened with Messi, we'd have been like, look, something came up, guys. We, you know, we would be defending him. I'm just saying in this particular case,
I understand.
Your bias is really affecting things,
yes,
which is fine.
But
I just want to call it what it is.
When Iniesta won the award, Messi was there. Congratulating him and so forth. So that's all I'm saying.
You're missing my point.
I understand what you're saying. I'm just ignoring it.
I'm pulling a U.S. presidential debate, and I'm just going to talk as if no one even asked me anything.
Yeah,
I'm going to talk about what I want to talk about.
Just don't stand behind me and hover me like a creep.
No.
You know? Well, anyway, we got your favorite time of the year, Nations League.
Yes. The Nations League, the league that everyone has been hoping for.
We talked about this in our Patreon episode, and we were having a good laugh about it because obviously this Nations League is a new concept to international friendlies. And you were doing the whole great job of explaining everything, and you lost me after the first sentence.
You just stopped listening. You didn't even care.
But if you want to go through the Nations League format really quick.
UEFA came up with this idea for holding a tournament for internationals rather than just friendlies to try and at least give it the appearance of being more competitive. And I think the idea, of course, is to give some more incentive actually to the smaller nations, but also the larger nations. So it's all the countries in Europe for this are split up into four leagues, A, B, C, and D. League A is all the top countries, all the top seeded countries, and then it goes down from there to League D, all the lowest ranked countries. And their idea to try and incentivize the countries to, you know, play well and take it seriously as a competition is there's promotion and relegation in it. So the bottom teams in League A will next time be dropped to League B, and, you know, what country wants that kind of egg on their face, I guess. But the funny thing is that the results are somewhat related to the Euro and European qualifiers, but not closely enough. So it's very questionable as to how seriously any one national side is going to take this tournament. We're predicting that they're probably just going to treat them like friendlies anyway. They're going to have that kind of atmosphere to them rather than a really competitive tournament.
And Luis Enrique is trying to start a Spanish revolution here with a new style of players. And so there was a little bit of controversy with Alba not being on the list. But, you know, the next game is against Real Sociedad on September 15th. And I don't know if you saw, but they just signed Sandro to Real Sociedad. So he's going to probably be in the starting lineup at that point. And, you know, it's always a tough match at the Anoeta. So,
yes. And so they're going to be playing that after we come back from the Nations League break. But on the upside, Jordi Alba will be fresh.
And so will Messi.
Yeah.
And so will Alba. Or so will Pique, too. So,
right.
You know, so our players are getting a little bit older now. They're not going to be required to be doing this international duty, which is great. So they'll be able to relax even more. And
or at least just stay at home and train.
Exactly.
No traveling. You know, I mean, they're probably going to be out at the training ground, but it's not as it's not as difficult as having to get on the plane, and especially for someone like Messi, right? To have to go to Argentina or something like that, you know, not as taxing.
Yeah, so that would be good. Exactly. So most of our players will be fresh. And again, because we'll need it, because the Anoeta is such a tough place. I think we've only won once there in the last 9 years or something like that. And that place is just always tough to play, especially with the weather. That field is so weird with that track around it. It's just such an old school type of Olympic stadium style. And they always play tough there just because of the climate and the way the grass is. They usually let it grow a little bit longer, so it's harder to have that slick passing style that we love to have.
Yeah, and Real Sociedad is not a bad team.
No, I mean, they're always right in the middle. You know, they're always right in the middle. I'm interested to see how they'll do this season, especially, you know, they're always kind of those teams that can really give you that trouble, and they never have enough money to make those signings that to put them over the top, you know, to be in the top six, the top seven. But they're still tough at home. Always tough at home.
Well, it's got to be tough being in San Sebastian. You know, it's like the secondary city in Basque Country, which is like secondary to Madrid and Barcelona in Spain. It's not as big a place. But then again, they lost to Eibar this weekend, and Eibar lost to Huesca before that. So who knows?
Yeah, the Basque mini Basque Derby. You know.
Yeah.
We're going to see, you know, how this team, if we're going to have some rotation, I definitely see us going into a 4-4-2 for that game, stronger 4-4-2.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see what Val Green does with that game.
Yeah. And for all of you listening, what do you think? Any changes to the lineup for the next match, or should Valverde start the same lineup against Sociedad? Let us know. BarçaTalk.net. Special thanks today to our Barca B correspondent, Max Bleuer. This has been a production of Barca Talk, written by Gabriel Quiroga and Brian Henderson, editing and music by Brian Henderson, social media and promotion by Gabriel Quiroga. We can't make this show without you, the listeners, so go to barçatalk.net/support to see the premiums you get with a monthly contribution. And visca Barça!